Here's a question for you. When was the first time you remember a piece of music making a really big impression on you?
Yeah, okay. Well, when I was a kid, I was a ballet girl, and I do remember the first time. So I was into ballet music.
Right.
Okay. My friends might have.
We all were, let's be honest.
Well, I do remember the first time I heard a ballet russe, ballet Scheherazade, the music for that Rimsky-Korsakov. And, you know, it's very exciting, it's very passionate, it's very emotional music. And I have to say, I remember I felt my head and my body expand listening to it.
Wow.
I think that's
beautiful.
That was how it felt.
Well, I think no matter what your upbringing, you only have to hear the opening strains of one of your favourite songs, and then your memory takes you to that place and you're transformed. So what if we could learn, for sake of argument, to use music as a tool to really regulate our moods, to calm us down or speed us up, depending on the situation? New research from the University of Queensland has been exploring that with two cohorts of teenagers, and I caught up with project leader Dr. Genevieve Dingle from the university's School of Psychology.
So this is taking a very simple idea that most of your listeners would be well familiar with, which is that listening to particular types of music affects our emotions.
Yeah.
And it just gives that a sort of application in how you can manage your emotions and to think about the types of music that you're surrounding yourself with and how that's going to affect you.
Genevieve, isn't it true too, though, that young people instinctively use music anyway as a self-soother? Isn't that what they're doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely they do. So there is good research. Both some of the research I've done, but also a lot of research elsewhere, is saying that the much highest consumption of music and downloading music, sharing music, is in that sort of adolescent to young adult age group. So they're spending hours every week intentionally listening to music, and a lot of that is around sustaining a mood state or changing a mood state. So it is something that's instinctive, but I think young people really can be more wise and more aware of how they're using music to kind of get the best out of it.
Which is where Tuned In comes in. So what did you do with these two cohorts of people? You better describe who these cohorts are.
Okay, so in the paper that's already published, which was using Tuned In for general emotion regulation in adolescence, one of the cohorts were young people that were sort of at risk. So they'd dropped out of high school or perhaps been asked to leave high school for a range of different psychosocial problems. And so we ran the group with them for 8 sessions once a week within a sort of experiential and life skills type of program.
Now, before we go on this, Genevieve, I take it that some of the issues surrounding this cohort may be difficulties in learning uptake as well.
Absolutely.
As behavioural as well, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. So a lot of these youngsters in that particular cohort also had learning difficulties. So they were there getting some basic numeracy, literacy skills and that sort of thing.
Right.
And we went in as part of their general life skills to talk about emotions and how to use music to manage their emotions.
And the other cohort? Who's the other one?
The other cohort were more mainstream school, so year 8s and year 9 students from a mainstream school in that other study, just to sort of look at how generalizable the findings were with those different kinds of adolescents.
So this is very early research, and I think you make the point in the paper there's much more to come on this, but what were they being asked to do?
The first session is really very general emotion education, if you like. So we're talking about why feelings are your friends and what the functions of emotions are. And that helps people to understand that when I have this funny feeling in my body, it might mean anger or it might mean sadness. And that's there for a purpose. And if you understand that, then it's not quite so overwhelming when you get it. And of course, when you're an adolescent or a young adult, you get very strong emotional ups and downs. So it's good to sort of recall, well, you know, if I've got really strong anxiety, it's here for a reason to protect me. It's just that it's too intense or it's lasting too long for this particular circumstance that I find myself in.
And here are the physical symptoms that go with that emotion, so you can recognise it in that tangible way.
That's right, absolutely. Yeah. And of course, once you're in a group with other peers your own age, it's really helpful because suddenly you're not alone with those funny feelings. Other people have had them too. So you get that nice kind of normalising within the group about those emotional experiences, which I think young people don't tend to have many opportunities to share and talk about within their peer groups or at school in class. I don't think there's a lot of emotion education in the curriculum. So that's quite a good starting point for them.
And then you start to link the music, do you, to those symptoms.
Absolutely.
And how you may want to alleviate them.
That's right. So we talk about a very simple two-dimensional model. So if you can imagine just a cross written on a page, the sort of horizontal line is about your level of energy or arousal. So from very highly sort of agitated or excited down to very sleepy, sedated. Sorry, that's the vertical. And then the horizontal is just a positive to negative. So we call that valence. And then you can imagine if you cross over those two dimensions, you can sort of locate all of those emotions that we have words for, like happiness, sadness, anxiety, etc.
When it comes to what you call valence, this is the kinds of what the lyrics may be and also the mood of the song in terms of how it makes you feel, whether it means up or down.
Yeah, it's really just how pleasant or unpleasant. So it's how pleasant or unpleasant anything is. It could be a taste or it could be something you're looking at, but in this case it's the sounds in the music. So if you play a piece of music, somebody might find a piece of music really positive and pleasant and that's their favourite kind of music, but to some other listener that might be really unpleasant, it's not their favourite kind of music.
Exactly.
So that's a dimension they can rate that piece of music on. And the other dimension, of course, is the energy or arousal. So some types of music will be really high energy, you know, fast tempo, bright sounds. A genre like a hip-hop or a rock genre that is quite fast and complex, and so that will increase their energy and arousal. Which might be really useful if you're trying to get motivated for something.
Isn't that why, for example, in a movie like Rocky, if you look at those sort of boxing and sporting analogies in cinema, you've got those trademark themes that sound inspirational. So is it like that when it comes to music for young people, the higher paced, generally more aroused and more happy they'll be?
That's right. But I think what we're doing in the course is really getting people to pay a little bit closer attention to what kind of music they're using for what kind of purposes.
Right.
Because, for instance, the type of music that you say is your favourite album might be great music for motivating you to go out for a run or, you know, before you get to a party or meet your friends. So that could be really high energy, high arousal music. But if you're trying to study and read passages and remember them for a test, that may not be the best kind of music because it might be too high arousal and you might need to drop that down so that you can focus better on what you're reading and thinking about. So we're just really teaching them about the elements of the music, their emotional response to that, and then how they can use that strategically for whatever the purpose is at the time.
So Genevieve, you actually asked the people in this study, these young people, to come along with their favourite tune first up, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So in the paper that's published, it was one group got an 8-session program where there was a different emotion focus for each session. So it might be bring your happy music this week, and a few people in the group would share their music. And then we did a number of activities to try and kind of enhance the emotional response and the attention to the music that was being shared.
So look, this may sound glaringly obvious to people, but I mean, the point being is that you're trying to get these people of this age group to enunciate the feeling that goes with their music choice. And often that sort of language around mood doesn't come very easily.
Exactly. In fact, we found it was very, very, what we call their emotion lexicon, if you like, the number of vocab words they had for naming feelings was very, very small. And it's really just, oh, I feel good, or I feel okay. It's, you know, there's not a lot of language. And if you can't name what you're feeling, it means that it's really difficult then for you to open up strategies for how to regulate and manage that feeling. So part of it is just understanding what you're feeling, putting a name to it, and then that opens up what strategy might be useful to change how you're feeling or stay in that feeling, depending on what it is and whether you want it there.
My guest is Dr. Genevieve Dingle from Queensland University, and we're talking about how she and her co-researcher explored how music can be used by young people to help change or manipulate mood when it comes to things like social behaviour, but also learning, particularly when you're looking at things like year 12 exams and the pressures and anxieties around study. So, over the 8 or 10 week period, what were some of the artists that flashed through the cohort? Were there common themes of artists for different moods?
Well, for instance, with the feeling calm and relaxed week, we had a lot of people bring in reggae. There's a genre that I hadn't come across before called country rap.
If you're from the sticks and you proud, turn this up.
I'm a hillbilly, hillbilly gangster, ain't nobody riding like me.
It's huge in Ipswich, apparently, country rap, so there you go.
Okay.
Yep, have a look for it. And then sort of for the more upbeat, there was a whole range. I mean, some of the young people really like sort of complex music like metal. Some of them were saying I like the soundtrack of, you know, a recent movie they'd seen. So it was kind of more popular music for some. I don't think the genre matters, you know, it's really very personal to the young person. So it was really more about teaching them to think about their own chosen music and how it's affecting them.
So it's one thing to teach emotional literacy through music. It's another one for them to start being very conscious about the music they choose to enhance learning. Did you have any results out of this study that prove that this kind of musical literacy can enhance their learning?
Well, so in the published paper, that wasn't specifically about learning, but the current adapted version is tuned in academic. So it is very much more focused around academic emotions.
Are you noticing any trends here that are really beneficial?
It's a bit early to tell, but some of the, just anecdotally from some of the participants, it's quite interesting the differences in music that people choose to listen to focus when they're studying. So we find that some students choose not to listen to any music because it's too distracting, and they're quite sensitive to music and sound stimuli. And so for them, having any music on makes it, they have to fight against it to try and concentrate on what they're studying.
It's too distracting.
That's right. Then we get a sort of second group who prefer to study to music, but it has to be things like classical music, instrumental music, movie soundtracks where there's no lyrics, so they're not competing against the meaning of words, what they're reading versus what they're hearing, and that makes good sense. And then we've got this interesting smaller third group who listen to really complex, kind of high energy, arousing music that might have lyrics, because the way they describe it is that it takes off the worrying part of their brain, or sort of gives that part of their brain something to do, and that allows the rest of their brain to focus on their studies. So I'm finding that a really interesting subgroup, and obviously there's more research to be done about how that works in terms of splitting your attention.
But interestingly enough, Genevieve, I have all three descriptions you've just made there inside my family.
Yes.
My youngest daughter can't listen to anything while she's studying or working on a paper. My middle daughter likes listening to calming music. It may be classical, or it may be folk, or it may be something instrumental. And my son, who's already graduated high school, used to listen to high-energy psychedelic rock.
Okay,
just to get through his work.
Yeah.
But here's the concern I've always had about this, is that as much as I encourage that if it got them studying and focusing, whatever, you know, worked, let's use it, you can't replicate that atmosphere, that environment, in an exam situation. You're not allowed to. So are we propping them up with stimuli that just won't be there when it's most needed?
Okay, well, that is a fantastic question, Michael, and I wish I knew the answer as clearly as that. But my thoughts at the moment, and from talking anecdotally to some of the participants, is that if they tend to study to a particular track or album a lot, they actually can become conditioned to hearing that. And so you can get quite strong musical memories when you're, say, in an exam. And some schools are really at the forefront of this, and they understand that young people do turn to music for emotion regulation, and they've allowed, like one of the schools we worked at last year, have allowed their students to use their preparation time before exams to put their earphones on and be in their own musical zone, which I think is actually really helpful compared to having students kind of talking amongst themselves, getting really stressed out and actually having that emotional contagion amongst themselves about being frightened. It's actually much better to take yourself away, put music on if that helps you, do your breathing, you know, and go into a space where you're calm and you can engage those logical parts of your brain to think and perform at your best.
And I just want to mention to you and to people that one of the things I really enjoyed at the very end of the paper, along with all the references and academic links, one of the last lines in the acknowledgements is, Adele's Someone Like You Will Never Be the Same Again.
Yes, that's because somebody played it in one of the schools. It was the girls' school, of course, and this is a couple of years ago. And we were only going to play a little, you know, 30-second clip, and they all just burst into song and we couldn't stop them. So we had a whole auditorium of Adele singing Someone Like You. It was beautiful.
And at the end of that, they all felt really good about themselves, I'm sure.
They did.
Well, Genevieve, thank you very much. It's a really interesting frontier of psychology, and all the best with it.
Thank you, Michael. Lovely to talk to you.
I wish nothing but the best.
The teenage girl's favourite, Adele. And the next round of tune-in classes for this study begins in Brisbane in July. This is Life Matters, Amanda Smith with you. And Michael McKenzie, what was the first piece of music that stirred your youthful soul?
I still have it. It's in a very battered cover. It's the four-track Beatles Souvenir EP that came out in Australia when they toured back in 64. Four fabulous tracks. She Loves You, mm-hmm. I Want to Hold Your Hand, Roll Over Beethoven, the Chuck Berry song, and Can't Buy Me Love. And at the age of three, I would put it on the radiogram myself and just dance the hell out of that. My grandmother.
Your grandmother must have been very modern.
She was very cool.
All right, let's move on now, Michael, to feedback and comments.
Well, on that matter of music, I was asking on Facebook on behalf of the show, what was the first piece of music that ever stirred your soul and why? Fantastic responses. Naomi says, AC/DC's Back in Black, and at the time, I was a right-wing fundamentalist Baptist Christian. It awakened my soul.
Whoa.
Yeah. Someone else, Nilda says, Killing Me Softly. I was very young, but the words and the music got to me. Still one of my favourite songs.
Beautiful song.
Victoria, Lust for Life.
Roberta Flack,
that's right. Victoria says, Lust for Life by Iggy Pop. I was 16 and wanting to break free from something or anything. There's The Angels mentioned, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes by Kim. Then you get to Jill, who says, Peter and the Wolf by Prokofiev.
Yeah, good on you, Jill.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that. Jan says, Desolation Row from Dylan. Rosemary says, Grieg's Piano Concerto in A Minor. So beautiful. So, look, go and have a look on Facebook. There's so many great suggestions. Teresa says, Strange Fruit by Nina Simone. Mm. So there we are.